Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everybody. Well, today is Wednesday. It's October 28th, 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard. Our first guest today is the senior counsel with the firm of, Keene and Bean, PC. And the person we're going to be speaking to is Joel. I'm losing my mind today. I don't know why, because I'm having some difficulty with a system. Joel Sachs, and he represents different homeowners in Yonkers. And the issue is the massive United Parcel Service distribution facility that's to be located at 5555 Tuckahoe Road. And so it's a very, very interesting case. And I guess one of the most interesting things for me in the very beginning is I didn't hear about this issue until about mid-August. And what was fascinating about it is that I had never seen any legal notice that there was even a discussion about investing or upgrading the facility so that the distribution facility could be moved ahead. So we'll see where that goes. All right, we're having a couple of minutes difficulty. Oh, here he is, Mr. Bear with me a minute. Good morning.
Hezzy, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It's Joel Sachs. How are you? Good morning.
Mr. Sachs, what a pleasure. Good to have you on today. Well, I was telling the listeners, I had not heard about this till about 2 months ago, this whole issue about the United Parcel Service distribution facility. And what was I found compelling and actually very disheartening about it was there was no legal notice given so that the community would be aware that this was being contemplated.
There was no notice given. And no representatives of the community, including our clients, were ever allowed to speak at any planning board meetings. There was never a public hearing on this. This was basically a dialogue for a few months between UPS and the planning board members. And then they unanimously agreed to approve the site plan unanimously. It wasn't unanimous, it was a 5-2 vote, and they also decided that they would not require an environmental impact statement. But as I can explain later, one of the grounds in our lawsuit is that the residents were denied due process of law because there was no notice or opportunity for the residents, the impacted residents surrounding the site, to be heard.
So that what you're just saying is it's just not an opinion. This is the way the legal process is supposed to work, isn't it? You need to make a legal notice. You need to give people an opportunity to speak, be heard, and even an environmental impact statement. Isn't that all required? So how did we get? How did the city get away
I don't know how the city got away with it, but they did what they did, and the chairman of the planning board, Mr. Kozicki, I believe he's an attorney.
Yes.
And he certainly would know about due process of law and about notice and opportunity to be heard. But again, our clients and myself were not allowed to speak at any meetings. We're not allowed to present reports. We're not allowed to question the planning board. We're not allowed to question representatives of UPS. It's very unfortunate.
So when one files an Article 78, what does that do? What does Article 78 do for the clients that you represent, which are major Yonkers homeowners? I think there are, 2,000 homes?
Yeah, well, there are 2,000. We don't represent all 2,000 families. We represent three major, civic associations and homeowners associations. Plus, we have a number of individuals who also wanted to be parties to the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And basically what we're doing is we're challenging several determinations made by the planning board on August 19. the three determinations, or the first one, is they decided that in spite of numerous impacts on surrounding residents and impacts that would affect their health, safety, and welfare and quality of life and affect and impact the environment, the planning board decided that they would not require an environmental impact statement. And they basically took at face value every statement and every representation UPS made, and they said, there's no environmental issues here. We're not going to have a hearing. We're not going to have an environmental impact statement. We're not going to impose any mitigation measures to protect the community, which I thought was very unfortunate.
Well, that's an understatement in my book, unfortunate. But so wasn't one of the issues that they were going to define in this in this forward movement for this planning of the distribution center, weren't they going to put in a 24,000 gallon gas tank?
That's one of the most horrendous proposals. They were going to put in the planning board, as of now, has allowed them to put in two massive above ground 12,500 gallon fuel tanks, one with gasoline, one with diesel, and have hundreds of UPS vehicles lining up there day after day and night to refuel their vehicles. And the zoning code itself does not allow any above ground fuel tanks on any commercial property in the city. They all have to be underground. But the zoning board said that UPS doesn't have to comply with that requirement, and they let them put in above-ground tanks in conjunction with this massive, you know, truck refueling depot that's being proposed. So that's a separate issue, legal issue we're bringing to the court, because there's all sorts of safety and health concerns about explosions and fire and targets of terrorists, you know, going after an above-ground facility like that, close to a residential neighborhood with the tanks, and people are very afraid of that who live nearby.
I don't know if you've ever seen
these 12,500 gallon fuel tanks. They're like 25 feet high and 10 feet in diameter.
Really? Oh, my God. I had no idea they were that big.
Yeah, we put photos of them in the court papers that we are presenting to the judge.
Wow. And doesn't the area need to be zoned differently in order to permit these type of facilities? So the zoning
of this one particular parcel is in a commercial zoning, as called the CM zone, which allows a distribution center or warehouses, but the surrounding properties on three of the four sides is all residentially zoned, and there are single-family houses, there are co-ops, there are condos, and that's why there are like 2,000 households surrounding the site.
It's amazing. It sounds to me, even though I'm not a lawyer, but it sounds to me that the homeowners association and the people that you represent have a winning case. Could this conceivably be somehow defined differently?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you what the court will do. I mean, we think we have a good case, but, you know, I'm sure if the litigation goes ahead, UPS will put in their papers, the Yonkers Planning Board will put in their papers, and they're going to probably claim that they did look at all the issues of concern, and they found that they were really not issues of concern, and that there was no reason not to issue the site plan approval. But that's why we're that's why we're in court.
So, has there been any similar type of facility built?
Well,
like
UPS already has, I believe, 6 distribution centers in Westchester, including one in Mount Vernon, and the other closest one is in Elmsford on Route 9A. The problem is that all these other UPS distribution centers are located in industrial areas, like an industrial park or in commercial areas. None of them are located in a residential area surrounded by hundreds of homes. So that's why this is the wrong location to put a distribution center. Plus, UPS has bragged publicly that this is going to be the largest UPS distribution center in all of Westchester and the Bronx. So if they want to build a large distribution center, that's fine. God bless them. But let them build it in an industrial area or a commercial area where the other ones are, not in the midst of, you know, of an area surrounded by, you know, thousands of residents.
And has the planning board, have they defined that there would be no impact on the community?
Yes, they already determined that there would be no impact to the community. And it's especially disappointing with the planning board because, on one hand, I could understand why UPS, you know, is a profit-making venture. They're trying to get as much monetary yield out of that site as possible for the distribution center. But we would think that the planning board, when it reviews any development proposal before it, one of their primary responsibilities is for the planning board to say to the developer, if you want to develop this site for a distribution center or for a shopping center or for an office building, whatever, that's fine. But what protections are you going to offer the surrounding residential community so that they do not have to suffer the negative impacts of the development proposal? And here, the planning board, the majority members of the planning board, basically abdicated their responsibilities to the community, and it looked like they cared only about the interests, the financial interests of UPS, and did not really do what I believe they were obligated to do, which was to protect the interests of the community and impose certain mitigation measures on them. And the only way that could really be done is if UPS was required to prepare a full environmental impact statement, then there would be public discussion, public hearings, and they would get input from the residents and make UPS undertake certain modifications to their proposal to either scale it down or eliminate certain features, you know, such as this truck refueling station, or tell them that they could not have operations 24/7, that they would have to have operations during, you know, restricted business hours, maybe 7 in the morning till 7 at night, and they couldn't have over 400 employees working at the site. I mean, this is a massive, massive operation that's being proposed by UPS on the site. And the interesting thing, Hezzy, is that all prior uses of this site, there's never been a distribution center use. They've all been warehouse uses on the site. It was warehousing of clothes for Saks Fifth Avenue department store. There was warehousing of electronic equipment. There was a company called Pops Displays that made commercial displays that would be delivered to buildings or to stores or to trade shows. And all these warehouse uses, they had maybe at most half a dozen trucks a day in or out. They had maybe, you know, a minimal number of employees, 10 or 20. It was basically a 9-to-5 operation, and there was really no impacts from the warehouse use on the surrounding residents, whereas this is a completely new ball game. Hundreds and hundreds of trucks, upwards of 400 employees working there 24/7. It's crazy.
It does sound that way to me. I like the term that you used, abdication, their responsibility. When you have so much, first of all, when you have so many trucks waiting in line to refilled with gasoline or diesel,
right.
Isn't it going to impact also Tuckahoe Road? Isn't there going to be a need to?
I think it has to. I mean, they did a completely inadequate traffic analysis. They didn't really even talk about, you know, the whole Tuckahoe Road corridor and all the traffic that is going to be generated from this site. Are you aware there's already another distribution center on Tuckahoe Road, which is a FedEx center, a FedEx distribution center? That's kind of close to the entrance to the New York Thruway. It's between the Sprain Parkway and the Thruway. But there are absolutely no residences anywhere within a quarter mile of the FedEx facility. FedEx facility has no refueling of any of their vehicles on site. And as far as we know, they're good neighbors, because their neighbors are ShopRite supermarket across the street, and there's you know, other commercial and industrial uses, but no residences at all. So there's a very big contrast between the existing FedEx distribution center and this horrendous proposal by UPS at 555 Tuckahoe Road.
Well, the UPS, you know, I guess design for the area, just the impact on Tuckahoe Road alone, wouldn't cause the city to have to pay tremendous cost to widen the road, to build new curbs?
I would think so. And there's already been some road work that was done on Tuckahoe Road this summer by, I believe, by the State Department of Transportation or by the county. And we believe, but we have no proof, that that was done for the benefit of UPS. But again, we can't prove that, and I don't think anybody would ever acknowledge that.
Okay. Very interesting. And when we look at the homeowners association, the issues that they bring forward is not that they're against the development, it seems to me, but just that the development as it's been formulated and allowed to be pushed forward without their input denies them respect and denies them the ability to bring about issues that may need to be mitigated.
Right, to participate in the process.
Yeah.
I mean, our clients, you know, are resigned to the fact that there will be a UPS distribution center on the site, but not the massive 24/7 operation with hundreds of employees, hundreds of trucks, a refueling depot, lighting issues, noise issues, odor issues from the refueling.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the issues that we wanted the planning board to address and control, and they did nothing. They said no impact from any of these issues, no traffic impact, no visual impact, no impact from 24/7, no impact from a refueling depot. Everything
pollution
they brushed off and said no environmental impact, no health and safety reasons. And we're giving the complete green light to UPS to just go ahead.
Wow. And the property, does it really come into the equation? There's an abatement. Mr. Weissman, who owns the property, he's got an abatement for another 5 years, which began, I think, 5 years back. Benefit of the city to move ahead with this.
I do not know. We've been trying to get some information about that. So it's your understanding there's some type of tax abatement or pilot agreement?
I'll send you the paperwork, no problem.
Yeah, if you could, I'd appreciate that.
Absolutely. this is just mind-boggling to me, because never in my mind would I thought that it would be so egregiously out of alignment with what we thought is the conduct of government and the conduct of community to
right.
come to a meeting somehow, an understanding, a respectful understanding and discussion. So actually, over 2 months' time has been wasted, because they're trying, the administration through the planning board is trying to push this forward, and now they're getting pushback, and it's legal pushback. This could have all been avoided, couldn't it?
Correct, absolutely. And in fact, interestingly, and this is an argument we make in our court papers, they actually started construction of two new outdoor parking lots in back of the building and adjacent to very nice single-family residences in spring of 2020, months before the planning board issued site plan approval. And we requested both the planning board and the building commissioner to issue stop work orders and tell them that they had to stop work on these new parking lots, you know, and not do any work on the site until any type of site plan approval was granted. But they just went ahead, no stop work orders were issued, and construction, you know, continued in the summer, and it's continuing even now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So this shouldn't really have been a stalemate at this point, should it? Couldn't it seems so illogical to get into a challenge, you know, a fight.
Right. Well, there should have been, there should have been meetings, you know, of the planning board where UPS was in the room and the residents and their attorney were in a room and try to work out all these issues that would end up benefiting the residents and benefiting UPS and benefiting the city. But that never occurred.
Well, it's interesting. Maybe it's inappropriate. I'm not quite sure. But my takeaway is, if there's so much concern of engagement, discussion, somebody's afraid of something. And it seems the administration is somehow. They want to push this through. And again, What's the impetus for that when it could be quite deleterious to the area from every conceivable way? Pollution, safety, the impact to the infrastructure, and so on and so forth. And who knows what the traffic delays are going to be as well.
Correct.
And,
traffic is such a main issue. we submitted lengthy traffic report from a very reputable traffic consulting firm that's done a lot of work all over Westchester County. The planning board would not even allow us to present the report or have the traffic engineer present his report to the planning board. But every time there was a meeting where traffic was discussed, the traffic engineer for UPS was there, and he was allowed to say whatever he wanted to say. And nobody would question him at all. So it was like, if you were just listening to that meeting, you'd think that what the traffic engineer for UPS said was the gospel, and that the residents had no traffic impact issues with the project, which isn't true.
Well, Mr. Sachs, I'm really blown away, because I would never imagine that the planning board could deny the public their time to speak, and experts on
and
their
no
behalf
public,
to speak.
And no public and no public hearing ever on a massive project like this.
Is that supposed to be a legal construct? Does that happen everywhere?
No. I represent a lot of planning boards. My firm in the Hudson Valley, I also represent applicants in other municipalities. I've never heard of a situation other than in the city of Yonkers where there is no required public hearing for a large development proposal like this. It's unheard of. And again, this is one of the arguments we've raised in our court cases.
So, your timetable, what does it look like from now on?
Well, we're we started the lawsuit.
Yes.
The judge is going to have a conference. We may be asking the court to issue some type of restraining order or preliminary injunction. We may to try to get the court to stop further construction on the site on a temporary basis until the court makes a final determination on the subject of the lawsuit. So like a temporary stop work.
Right.
And look, the other thing the judge may decide, the judge may say, look, there's a lot of issues here, and would it make sense for the parties to try to get together with the assistance of the court or a neutral third party and try to work out some of these issues? I don't know.
That seems like a logical progression. It's up to the court.
It's up to the court how to handle it.
Okay. And what about the homeowners? They must be beside themselves, aghast at what's going on, that their rights have been, usurped by a system
absolutely.
That doesn't respect
and,
them.
And especially, we mentioned this in the court papers, back in 2014 when the Weissman family got its approval for the Hampton Inn, the Weissmans and their attorney promised the city council and the planning board that there would be forever green open space between the back of the warehouse building and the residences. And in spite of that representation by the Weissmans and their attorneys, they just ignored it this year. And as I said, they brought in their backhoes and bulldozers in, like, I think as early as May of this year, and started digging up that green space and are now putting in two huge employee parking lots in that area that the Weissmans promised would be for evergreen open space.
And
we brought that to
the
attention
of
the court, too. What's that?
That makes a lot of sense. Do we know yet what's going to happen to the Hampton Inn?
Well, I have no idea. I don't know. I'm not sure what you're talking about, what's going to happen to it. I mean,
Did you know what they were going to do with it, or they were going to demolish it or maintain it? Or
The Hampton Inn is on property owned by the Weissmans, and I think the Weissmans also own the Hampton Inn itself, and they probably lease it to the Hampton Inn. But, I mean, it's all part of one huge parcel that the Weissman family owns, and they divided part of the parcel on the east side to make the Hampton Inn, and the rest of it is this proposed UPS warehouse, distribution center.
Unbelievable. Well,
you have callers with any questions, or you don't know?
To be honest,
to do that.
We do that. To be honest, we didn't have any callers on this issue.
Okay.
To be honest, quite often I remember when I got started, I figured the whole world would be calling in all the time. But I found out, and I was sat down in a very gentle way and said, look, it's not based on how many people are calling in. It's based on how many people are listening. And we have a very large listenership.
Sure.
Except that when the discussion is interesting and the guests are interesting and the moderator, me, is not a slouch, then people are listening because hopefully we're bringing up the questions that they would think of asking on their own.
Right, right, right.
So we don't always have callers, but we sometimes do. So I hope you're not disappointed.
Right. No, because I know this ends at 10:30, and I was just wondering if there was anybody who had any questions. So
I would have taken them.
Oh, you would have.
To be
okay,
honest,
fine.
If they had called, absolutely.
But I appreciate the opportunity. I've told you in 25 minutes more than I've been able, and more than our clients have been able to tell the planning board in the past 6 months. I mean, at least, you know, we have a voice where we can be heard, a place where we can be heard. We were not heard before the planning board, but hopefully we'll be heard before the court, and justice will prevail.
And we have an audio clip of this conversation anyway, which I'll be sending to you as well.
Okay, great.
So,
thank you very
much for your time, Mr. Sachs.
Okay,
yes,
Hezzy.
All the best
to
you.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank
great.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, how exciting just to find out what's really going on. And so it's great to hear Mr. Sachs. Always a pleasure that way. Let's take a quick break, find out what we're doing in our neck of the woods, and then we'll continue on.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. So we have changed our number because we found that people were confusing it with something else. So you can now reach us at the office by text or by voicemail. And the number is 914-512-8095. So 914-512-8095. And so that's to reach out to the Yonkers Tribune. And yet the number here, if you want to reach out to the Westchester on the Level broadcast, is 347-205-9201. So let me move on to some other issues that we can discuss with you. Bear with me a moment. I want to make sure that we have things in place. Bear with me a second here. There's so many pages open. And, okay. And I think we're almost there. Okay, one more second. I want to see if there was something else on the local level that I wanted to share with you, and I think this was what I was looking for. Bronxville Mayor's column for the week of October 26th, written by Mary Marvin, Esquire, she shared this information with us, which is published online. She writes, "The New York State Legislature approved a $178 billion 2020 to 2021 state budget. However, the budget includes language that permits the state budget director to make uniform or targeted reductions to appropriations if the state budget becomes unbalanced because revenues fall below projections or expenditures rise above projections during three different periods. That is from April 1 to April 30th. May 1 to June 30th, and July 1st to December 31st of the state fiscal year. So as a consequence, the small amount of state funding the village received is not at all a certainty. So not only is this indicative of the issue confronting the village of Bronxville, but the entire state, and certainly all of Westchester County. Now, despite the COVID crisis, the New York State Legislature had a very active session passing bills, with many of the more consequential ones relating to law enforcement. So let's review the major legislative changes that the mayor was kind enough to post. First is the repeal of Civil Rights Law 50/A. The previous law made all personnel records used to evaluate the performance toward continued employment or promotion of police officers, firefighters, paramedics, corrections officers, or peace officers confidential and not subject to inspection or review without an individual's express written consent or a court order. Now, this legislation also amended New York State Freedom of Information Law, known as FOIL, by now subjecting any record created in furtherance of a law enforcement disciplinary proceeding to be disclosed under FOIL. Then we have the Eric Garner Anti-Chokehold Act. This creates the crime of aggravated strangulation, making it a Class C felony, and establishes criminal penalties for a police officer or peace officer who uses a chokehold that causes serious physical injury or death. Another issue, falsely, purposely summoning a police officer. This issue establishes civil penalties for summoning a police officer or peace officer when there is no reason to believe a crime or offense or imminent threat, person or property is occurring involving a member of a protected class. Then we have law enforcement misconduct investigative office. This establishes that this office within the Department of Law and the Attorney General's office will be tasked with receiving and investigating complaints from any source concerning allegations of corruption, fraud, use of excessive force, criminal activity, conflicts of interest, or abuse in municipal police and other law enforcement agencies. Another issue, Office of Special Investigations. This establishes the office within the office of the Attorney General, which will have investigative authority and criminal jurisdiction for any incident involving the death of a person caused by an act or omission by a police officer or a peace officer, where an investigation concludes that the death or matters relating to the death or investigation of the death involved criminal conduct, the office will be empowered to prosecute any such alleged offender. Then we have the concern about police weapon discharge reporting. This requires a police officer or peace officer, whether on or off duty, who discharges his or her weapon under circumstances where a person could be struck by a bullet, to verbally report the incident within 6 hours and file a written report within 48 hours. Another concern, recording law enforcement activity. This provides that a person not under arrest or in the custody of a law enforcement official has the right to record police activity and to maintain custody and control of that recording and of any property or instruments used by that person to record such activities. That is something new. Well, medical response for arrestees. The issue affirms an individual's right to medical and mental health attention while under arrest or otherwise in custody of a police officer. A failure to provide reasonable and good faith medical assistance could result in a cause of action against the officers. Then we have the body cameras for state police. This requires that all state police officers wear body cameras while on patrol. Then we have the issue of police statistics and transparency. Requires courts compile and publish data concerning arrests and court proceedings involving low-level offenses such as violations and traffic offenses. Such reports will include aggregate demographic information such as race, ethnicity, and sex. Then we go on to bail reform amendments. The state restored to the court some of the discretion that was lost as part of last year's bail reform measures, specifically, the number of qualifying criminal offenses has been expanded that grant judges the authority to consider setting a monetary bail amount when analyzing a defendant's likelihood of returning to court for future court appearances. A further amendment also expands the type of non-monetary conditions a court can impose on a defendant during the pendency of their case. Then we have the amendments to discovery reform. This amendment puts in place additional prosecutions against disclosure of witnesses and victim information, including 911 caller information. Specifically, prosecutors may now withhold such information without having to obtain a court order first. Then we move on to Environmental Protection Fund. The Environmental Protection Fund continues to be funded at $300 million, including $39 million for solid waste programs, $89 million for parks and recreation, $153 million for open space programs, and $19 million for climate change. Moving on to the Mother Nature Bond Act. Well, the state budget includes language that establishes a $3 billion bond act, which would require approval via a statewide referendum on November 2020. That's around the corner. The $3 million in bond proceeds would be used to preserve and restore the state's natural resources and reduce the impact of climate change by funding projects to restore natural habitats, protect open spaces, reduce flood risk, and improve water quality. Then we have the Styrofoam Law. Effective on January 1 of 2022, the state will impose a ban on the sale, use, and distribution of food service containers and loose fill packing that contains styrofoam and packing peanuts. This ban will preempt all local laws to the contrary. Then we have the last issue. The manual election recounts. The state amended the election law and now requires county boards of elections to conduct manual recounts of ballots from any general, special, or primary elections, including village elections, in the following circumstances: where the margin of victory is 20 votes or less, where the margin of victory is 0.5% or less, and in a contest where 1 million or more ballots are cast and the margin of victory is less than 5,000 votes, the result of the manual recount will supersede the returns filed by the election inspectors where the canvass was initially conducted. So that's the article written by Mary C. Marvin, the mayor of the village of Bronxville, New York. And you can share your thoughts by directing email to mayor@vobny or villageofbronxvillenewyork.com, vobny.com. She's such a brilliant individual. It's just mind-boggling. I don't know how she does it. And the best thing about Mary Marvin is that she's able to engage in the running of the village without leaning in one direction or the other from a political perspective, and is so balanced that it's amazing. I know her party affiliation, but that doesn't seem to matter. That's her personal, interests and alliances or allegiance to a particular party. But what's interesting is she runs government with a conglomeration of everyone's input, and she's always looking for it, and they somehow are able to plan it and put it all together. It's absolutely brilliant, literally brilliant. Okay, let me just quickly look to see what else we have here. I think that that was the most pertinent issue. Oh no, this was the other thing I wanted to talk to you about. And this was written by Greenberg Town Supervisor Paul Feiner. And the article is the name of the title to the article is New York State Board of Elections Authorizing More Voting Hours to Reduce Lines. And very important issue. So he writes that the Westchester County Board of Elections co-executive director Bob Brehm, B-R-E-H-M, needs to have longer hours, more staff at the Greenberg voting locations. And he writes that 2, 3, and even 4.5 hour waits for voting is excessive and not reasonable. He points out that in Greenberg looking for volunteer entertainers this weekend to make the wait better. Also, he has a suggestion that have 1 hour earlier voting hour for the disabled and frail elderly. And he writes that although the town of Greenberg has no control over the election process, the Westchester County Board of Elections oversees the elections. He says that we are trying hard to make the election process less stressful for voters who have been waiting online for long periods of time. And he writes that we are doing one, live streaming the Greenberg Town Hall voting location so you'll have a better idea when to vote. 2, offering outdoor flu shots to voters waiting online, courtesy of the Greenberg Health Center. 3, arrange for food trucks to be at Town Hall parking area so hungry voters waiting in line can purchase food and drink. 4, created a senior citizen line. 5, created priority lines for the disabled and very frail elderly. They go first, he says. I think the town is doing more than most communities to make the voting experience a less aggravating experience. And he writes that he hopes to have entertainment this weekend from volunteer musicians, yoga instructors as well. And he asks that if you want to volunteer, direct your email to Judith, stands for Judith Bevel, B-E-V-I-L-L-E. So J-B-E-V-I-L-L-E at greenbergny.com or to the Paul Feiner himself, P-F-E-I-N-E-R, P-Feiner at greenbergny.com. And Judith Bevel is the Greenberg town clerk. She's an outstanding events coordinator. She knows how to party and if voters are going to vote for the candidate who represents the party of their choice, the voters might want to also party while voting for their party. So that was cute. So the lines are very long, 2 to 3 hours, and this weekend over 4.5 hours for some voters, which Mr. Feiner writes is outrageous. I've been complaining and received the following email from the New York State Board of Elections authorizing the Westchester County Board of Elections to increase hours of operation. First, a suggestion. I think the Westchester County Board of Elections should have an earlier voting hour specifically for and only for the disabled and frail and elderly. It should be scheduled before the polling place is open to everyone else. The voting booths are cleaner at the beginning of voting hours, and those with medical conditions would be safer if they have less contact with lots of other people during the COVID-19 virus. And he writes a correspondence from the New York State Board of Elections to local Board of Elections is in response to higher voter turnout during early voting. Then he notes the law, which is 9 NYCRR 6210.19(d)(1), which expressly requires the following. If the voter waiting time at any early voting site exceeds 30 minutes, the Board of Elections shall deploy such additional voting equipment, election workers, and other resources necessary to reduce the wait time to less than 30 minutes as soon as possible, but no later than the beginning of the next day of early voting. He continues, while the current voter enthusiasm is higher than anticipated, boards with voter wait times exceeding 30 minutes must work to come into compliance with the early voting wait time standard. In addition, boards may decide on a bipartisan basis to provide additional staff voter sign-in stations and or increase the early voting hours demand. Then there's another law, election law, subsection 8-600, number 4 and D, which provides that nothing in this section shall be construed to prohibit any board of elections from establishing a greater number of hours for voting during the early voting period beyond the number of hours required in this subdivision. Any expansion of hours would need to be provided uniformly at all poll sites in your county. So please contact any office, our office, with any questions. There's Bob Bream, who's the co-executive director, and of course, Paul Feiner, the Greenberg Town Supervisor. And just as a note for those who were unaware, Mr. Feiner suggested please flatten your paper boxes before you recycle them, because this will help the town be more efficient. And he writes that the failure to break down break up boxes requires our Department of Public Work crews to make multiple trips to pick up cardboard boxes, and this is costly. So please break your boxes and flatten them on paper recycling day. And there's a link to a YouTube station so you can watch how this is done. And hope you'll take advantage of that. Okay, so bear with me a moment. Now I want to move on to something else. Bear with me a second here. This is some financial news. Evidently, it's now close to 11 o'clock, but the Dow Jones have fallen more than 600 points as the rising coronavirus counts threaten fragile recovery. It seems that U.S. stocks dropped sharply today amid an alarming rise in coronavirus injections and hospitalizations, extending a turbulent week that pushed the Dow Jones Industrial Average into negative territory for the month. Diminished hopes for another round of stimulus and the approaching election also weighed on investors. So that's something to think about. It's just a fact of the day. Who knows what will be tomorrow. Okay, so let's move on to other concerns, and we'll move on to some more international stuff. This is interesting, what's happening in France. France is bracing for a possible new lockdown measure and measures as the COVID-19 hospitalizations mount. It seems that France is bracing for a potential new lockdown as President Emmanuel Macron prepares a televised address on Wednesday, that's today, which we haven't heard yet, so it's too soon for us to get a notice of it. But it's aimed at stopping a fast-rising tide of coronavirus patients in French hospitals and a growing daily death toll. Macron is to address the nation on Wednesday evening, so to present new measures that will be decided at back-to-back meetings of the Defense Council and Cabinet and Presidency. It's 11 o'clock now here, or almost that, so it could be about 7 or 8 o'clock in France, so he's probably just beginning now. We have to prepare for difficult decisions, Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin told France Inter Radio. At some point, we have to make hard choices, as our neighbors have, he said, referring to strict new measures announced for Italy, Spain, and elsewhere in Europe. Many French doctors are urging a new nationwide lockdown, noting that 58% of the country's intensive care units are now occupied by COVID-19 patients and medical staff are under increasing strain. The government didn't take into account what the first wave was and didn't learn all its lessons, Frédéric Valletu, president of the French Hospital Federation, said on Wednesday on France Inter Radio. He called for a full month-long lockdown, saying, quote, "This wave will be much more devastating for the hospital system. hospitals won't manage if we don't take drastic measures. Well, the French government has been loath to impose a new lockdown that would pummel the economy even harder, and business chiefs have warned a total shutdown would force another wave of layoffs and bankruptcies. Instead, the authorities imposed a curfew this month that now requires about 46 million people, two-thirds of the population, to be home from 9 p.m. to 6 the following morning as the number of daily virus cases has flared. Business owners and some politicians are pushing for a compromise, such as local lockdowns in the hardest hit areas or a lockdown that would allow schools to stay open. Economists warned that a full lockdown could impact Europe more broadly if other European countries hit hard by the rising infections, then follow France's lead. France reported 523 related deaths in 24 hours yesterday, the highest daily tally since April, bringing its overall death toll to 35,541, the third highest toll in Europe after Britain and Italy. Over the past few weeks, France has been reporting tens of thousands of new infections per day and is now recording more than 380 new cases each week per 100,000 people. So media reports say that Macron, who met to discuss the surge with senior ministers on Tuesday, might extend the curfew hours and possibly impose a full lockdown on weekends, or else order targeted lockdowns for the hardest hit regions. Another option could be to postpone the return of students from the autumn holiday that ends this weekend, in particular to high schools and universities. So there's so much going on all over the world. One second. Now let's go to Philadelphia, a little bit closer to home. Philadelphia has been rocked by a second night of unrest after a fatal police shooting of a black man. Hundreds of people demonstrated in Philadelphia late Tuesday, with looting and violence breaking out in a second night of unrest after the latest police shooting of a black man in the United States. The victim's family said they called an ambulance, not the police, for a mental health crisis, according to their lawyer. The Philadelphia Police Department warned on Twitter that, quote, a large crowd, end quote, of around 1,000 people was looting businesses in the area of Castor Avenue and Aramingo Avenue, advising citizens to, quote, avoid the area. Footage from a news helicopter appeared to show people breaking into and looting a Foot Locker sneaker store and another business. At another location in West Philadelphia, where an estimated crowd of 1,000 people had gathered, an Agence France-Presse reporter saw police armed with batons clashing violently with several dozen protesters. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's office announced a deployment of several hundred National Guard troops to the city, quote, to protect the right peacefully assemble and protest while keeping people safe. Well, the family called for an ambulance, not police, say their lawyer. The unrest came as the lawyer for the victim's family said they had called for an ambulance to get him help with a mental health crisis, not for police intervention. Police said that Walter Wallace Jr., 27, was wielding a knife and ignored orders to drop the weapon before officers fired shots Monday afternoon. But his parents said on Tuesday night that officers knew their son was in a mental health crisis because they had been to the family's house three times on Monday. Kathy Wallace, his mother, said that during one of those times, they stood there and laughed at us, she says. The Wallace family's attorney, Shaka Johnson, said that the victim's wife, Dominique Wallace, is pregnant and is scheduled to have labor induced on Wednesday. Johnson said that Wallace had nine children. Two briefly spoke at a news conference late Tuesday, along with the victim's mother and family, and father, rather. When you come to a scene where somebody is in a mental crisis and the only tool you have to deal with it is a gun, where are the proper tools for the job? Johnson said, arguing that Philadelphia police officers are not properly trained to handle mental health crises. Johnson said that Wallace's brother had called 911 to request medical assistance and an ambulance. In Washington, the White House issued a statement early Wednesday asserting that the unrest was another consequence of liberal Democrats' war against the police and that the Trump administration stands proudly and with law enforcement and stands ready upon request to deploy any and all federal resources to end these riots. Law enforcement is an incredibly dangerous occupation, and thousands of officers have given their lives in the line of duty, said the statement from Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. All lethal force incidents must be fully investigated, she says. The facts must be followed wherever they lead to ensure fair and just results. In America, we resolve conflicts through the courts and the justice system. We can never allow mob rule. Joe Biden, the Democratic challenger in the November 3rd presidential election, and his running mate, Kamala Harris, said in a statement that their hearts are broken, quote unquote, for Wallace's family. They also called on demonstrators to protest peacefully. No amount of anger at the very real injustices in our society excuse violence, they said. More than 90 arrests were made during the first night of sporadic riots and looting in the city on Monday, and 30 police officers were injured, including one whose leg was broken when he was hit by a truck. Oh, my God. The U.S. Has seen a wave of Black Lives Matter protests and rioting since the death of George Floyd in May in Minnesota, when an officer was filmed pressing his knee into Floyd's neck until the handcuffed man went limp. It was about over eight minutes long before that happened. But many of the protests have accused the police of racism and brutality. But President Donald Trump has focused on the unrest to bolster his claims of being the law and order candidate in his election battle against Biden. So that's what's going on over there. Now, let's look at what's happening on the international front again, Turkey. Well, it seems that Turkey is threatening legal diplomatic action over Charlie Hebdo's caricature of Erdogan. Well, Turkey on Wednesday vowed to take legal and diplomatic actions over a cartoon in the French satirical weekly Charlie Hebdo mocking Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Well, we assure our people that necessary legal and diplomatic actions will be taken against the cartoon, the Turkish presidency said in a statement issued on Wednesday morning. Minutes later, the Ankara prosecutor's office launched an official investigation into the publication, an Anadolu news agency had reported. Well, Turkish anger at the caricature added fuel to a row between Turkey and France about the magazine's cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, which flared after a French teacher by the name of Samuel Paty was beheaded outside his school in a Paris suburb earlier this month after he had shown pupils the cartoons in a lesson on freedom of speech. Quote, we strongly condemn the publication concerning our president in the French magazine, which has no respect for any belief, sacredness, and values, presidential spokesman Ibrahim Kalin wrote on Twitter. They are just showing their own vulgarity and immorality. An attack on personal rights is not humor and freedom of expression, he said. The cartoon, on the cover of the Charlie Hebdo showed Erdogan sitting in a white T-shirt and underpants and holding a canned drink along with a woman wearing an Islamic hijab. I condemn this incorrigible French rags immoral publication concerning our president, Turkish Vice President Fuat Oktay wrote on Twitter. I call on the moral and conscientious international community to speak out against this disgrace. Well, boycott and mental health check calls. tensions between the two countries increased over the weekend when Erdogan said that French President Emmanuel Macron needed a mental health check, prompting France to recall its ambassador from Ankara, the capital of Turkey. Erdogan has led calls for a boycott of French products. France, in turn, has called on its EU allies to take measures against Turkey following the boycott call. On Tuesday, the European Commission warned that Erdogan's comments make Turkey's stalled bid to join the EU an even more distant prospect, and calls for a boycott of products of any member state are contrary to the spirit of these obligations and will take Turkey even further away from the European Union, a spokesman had said. Turkey and France are both members of the NATO military alliance, but have been at odds over issues including Syria and Libya, maritime jurisdiction in the Eastern Mediterranean, and the conflict in Nagorno-Karabakh. At a summit earlier this month, European Union member states agreed to review Turkey's behavior in December and threatened to impose sanctions if Erdogan's provocations do not stop, a council statement had said. On Monday, European Union spokesman Peter Stano said that he would not rule out an urgent meeting of European Union ministers at an earlier date following Erdogan's comments and boycott calls. We clearly expect a change in action and declaration from the Turkish side, Stano said at a news conference. He said there would be many discussions, quote, to see whether we are going to continue to wait or take action earlier, end quote. Now, the Prophet Muhammad cartoons, considered blasphemous by Muslims, have been displayed in France in solidarity, and Macron has said he would redouble efforts to stop conservative Islamic beliefs from subverting French values, angering many Muslims. So that was the story there. Well, there's so much more going on around the world. One second. Oh, this is related, actually. France is defiant as the Turkish-led boycott spreads. So as Turkey's calls for a boycott of French products spread amid growing tension, France has described the Turkish position as hateful and said it will not denounce its principles and values. And so that's where it's come to. One second. Now let's look at Italy. Italy's backlash widens over the virus restrictions. It seems that business owners and opposition politicians in Italy rebelled on Wednesday against the latest restrictions imposed to combat a spike in coronavirus cases after days of occasionally violent protests. Now, scores of chefs and restaurateurs joined a rally in central Rome at lunchtime, kicking off protests in 24 cities organized by a business federation against rules forcing bars, restaurants, gyms, and other businesses to close their doors at 6 o'clock at night. Far-right and nationalist politicians ramped up their attacks on Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte, accusing him of sacrificing the economy for measures that will not save Italy from the virus. As he struggled to quell the anger late on Tuesday, Conte announced a package of tax cuts and support for the most affected businesses worth more than 5 billion euros. That's $5.9 billion. Well, however, warnings were growing that the health system was starting to struggle after the country registered 21,994 cases on Tuesday, the highest 24-hour count since the start of the pandemic. Protests in several cities have turned violent in recent days as football hooligans, far-right activists, and others have brought troubles to otherwise peaceful demonstrations. Wednesday's Rome protest held in front of the Pantheon close to the Senate drew politicians of all stripes keen to get on the side of with the burgeoning movement, even as its leaders insisted it was politically neutral. There is no health benefit from the closure of bars and restaurants, only economic disadvantage, said opposition leader Matteo Salvini from the protest sidelines a day after he threatened to mobilize officials belonging to his far-right League party against the new restrictions. So, and regional politicians began to amend the national regulations brought in just 2 days ago, with Sicily announcing it intended to extend opening hours for bars and restaurants. So, my God, there's so much happening all over the world. Now, the United States evidently is lifting a funding ban on Israeli research in the West Bank and the Golan. Well, the United States on Wednesday removed restrictions on funding for Israeli research in the occupied West Bank and Golan Heights, scrapping a policy in place since the 1970s. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu praised the, quote, huge significance, end quote, of the move that came less than a week before the U.S. presidential election. President Donald Trump, whom Netanyahu has hailed as Israel's strongest ever ally in the White House, has recognized Israeli sovereignty in the Golan and not criticized Jewish settlements construction in the West Bank. Trump's challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden, has broadly backed an international community consensus that Jewish settlements in the West Bank are illegal. Through the 1970s, the U.S. established three funding agreements for Israeli scientific foundations, but its stipulated financial support could not be channeled to projects conducted in areas that Israel occupied after the 1967 Six-Day War, including the West Bank and the Golan Heights, which was seized from Syria. Well, today, the United States and Israel agreed to remove geographic restrictions in each of the agreements, a U.S. embassy spokesperson statement had said. And during the ceremony at Ariel University in the West Bank, attended by U.S. Ambassador David Friedman, Netanyahu praised Trump's administration for, quote, rejecting the failed mantras of the past, end quote. Yonatan Freeman, a political analyst at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, told Agence France-Presse that Wednesday's event was the latest in a series aimed at, quote, trying to cement Trump as the more pro-Israel candidate, end quote. Trump's administration has also brokered normalization deals for Israel and the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain, pacts the president has highlighted during his campaign events. And Sudan will also establish ties with Israel. And Trump has given his record on Israel a prominent role in his reelection campaign, wooing Jewish voters and evangelical Christians with strong affinity to the Jewish state. So that's the story there. One second. Yes, we should know this as well. Political consultant has been detained in Belarus and returns to the United States. Well, a prominent American political strategist by the name of Vitaly Shklyarov has returned to the United States from Belarus, where he was detained in late July and accused of mobilizing protesters, his lawyers and officials said on Wednesday. That's today. Shklyarov was among several prominent figures seized in Belarus amid a crackdown on opponents of strongman President Alexander Lukashenko, whose victory in the August 9 presidential election sparked historic protests. A Harvard University fellow who has advised political campaigns in the United States, Russia, and Ukraine, Shklyarov, was detained in Minsk on July 29 and charged with organizing actions violating public order. He was released under house arrest earlier this month after meeting with Lukashenko inside the KGB Security Service prison where he was being held. In an October 24 phone call with Lukashenko, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo demanded the release of the wrongfully detained U.S. citizen. Pompeo on Wednesday welcomed his release. After 3 months of wrongful detention and house arrest, Mr. Shklyarov has been reunited with his family and has arrived in the United States, Pompeo said in a statement. As the president and I have made, clear, we will not tolerate foreign governments wrongfully detaining U.S. citizens. Shklyarov's lawyer, Anton Gashinsky, told Agence France-Presse that the strategist was in Washington. Gashinsky on Tuesday indicated his client had left Belarus for Ukraine, but did not specify how he was able to leave the country while under house arrest. Shklyarov has been actively commenting on the situation in Belarus ahead of the election. In an article for Forbes Russia, he said Lukashenko's election campaign was based on populism and crude force. Opponents of Lukashenko say that the true winner of the polls was Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, a political novice who ran in the election in place of her jailed blogger husband. She has since taken refuge in the European Union's member of Lithuania. All members of the opposition's coordination council, except for Nobel Prize-winning author Svetlana Alexievich, are either in exile or custody. The group is seeking to oversee the peaceful transition of power and organize new elections. Alexievich is also currently abroad for health reasons, and the disputed election has sparked unprecedented protests against Lukashenko's 26-year rule, which were met with a violent police crackdown. On Monday, the opposition announced a nationwide strike as Tikhanovskaya's deadline for Lukashenko to resign and halt violence against protesters was ignored. So we'll have to see where all that goes. Unbelievable. Now, let me just look. Okay, let's quickly look at Texas. Texas is poised for a record turnout with 8 million votes cast ahead of the poll or the election. With less than 1 week to go for the U.S. election, 68 million people have already cast their vote. That's nationwide. The traditionally red state of Texas is poised for a record turnout, which could favor the Democrats with 8 million already returning their ballots. So we're going to have to see where all that goes. That's going to be really, really a mind blower. Well, let's look at what's going on with Madonna. Evidently, the hand of God with my right, Madonna's dream 60th birthday gift came about. Diego Maradona reveals he has a dream present to mark his 60th birthday on Friday, to score another goal against England, this time with my right hand. The Argentine legend made the impish suggestion in an interview with France Football in reference to his Hand of God goal against England in the 1986 World Cup quarterfinals, with Argentina going on to take the title. So in the past, when asked about the handball, he has said, if I could apologize and go back and change history, I would do. But the goal is still a goal. Argentina became the world champions, and I was the best player in the world. In a more serious vein, in Wednesday's interview, he suggested his great pride was to have made people happy about football. I feel that I've given pleasure and amusement to those who watched me in the stadiums or on television, the Argentine legend told France Football. Maradona's birthday celebration may be compromised as he is currently in self-isolation after a bodyguard tested positive for COVID-19. A pandemic, says, is a real hard blow for the people of Latin America. Maradona, who has a history of drug and alcohol abuse and poor health, is considered at high risk of coronavirus complications should he be infected. He has suffered 2 heart attacks in the past and contracted hepatitis. Several weeks ago, he went into self-isolation after one of his players contracted the virus, with Argentina alone recording more than 1 million positive cases amongst its 44 million population, with 29,000 deaths. His latest job since hanging up his boots sees him in the post of manager of Argentine First Division side Gimnasia y Esgrima La Plata, who are due to play on the day of his birthday. in what is presented as his first interview in French media for 25 years, Maradona suggested Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo are a cut above the other players around at the moment. Not one is able to have of what they can. So it truly, I think he's so right on target about that. Now, this is very interesting as well. Evidently, a rape investigation against French actor Gérard Depardieu is going to be reopened. A rape investigation against French actor Gérard Depardieu will be reopened after his accuser refiled her complaint when prosecutors dropped a previous inquiry, sources close to the case told Agence France-Presse on Wednesday. The accuser, an actress in her 20s, who accuses Depardieu of raping and assaulting her at his Parisian home in August of 2018, refiled the complaint after prosecutors dropped the case in June 2019, citing a lack of evidence. After she reported her allegations, bear with me a moment. After she reported allegations against the celebrated actor, who is 71 and denies any wrongdoing, prosecutors in the southern city of Aix-en-Provence opened a preliminary investigation, which they then passed on to their Paris colleagues. Paris was dropped after 9 months after investigators said they had failed to assemble enough proof to proceed to formal charges. The actress later refiled her claims, which under French law almost always leads to a case being examined by an investigating magistrate. A source close to the investigation said on Wednesday that this decision had now formally been taken. It was also confirmed by a judicial source. Depardieu's lawyer, Hervé Temimet, said he had not been informed of the case's reopening, but called it a non-event, as it is an automatic decision that an investigating magistrate be appointed. Depardieu, a superstar in France, thanks to films like Cyrano de Bergerac or Jean de Florette and Camille Claudel, has also had a successful international career, working among others with Peter Weir in Green Card and with Ridley Scott in 1492. He holds both French and Russian citizenship, acquiring the latter in 2013 to protest a proposed tax hike on the rich in his French homeland. So that's the story there. This is very interesting. On a world stage, Thailand's first transgender minister of parliament is dismissed from parliament. Well, Thailand's parliament lost its first transgender minister of parliament on Wednesday after the Constitutional Court revoked her seat in what critics called a political move against supporters of the kingdom's pro-democracy movement. Thanwarin Suhapisit, a former actor and filmmaker, was a pioneer for the LGBTQI+ community when she won a seat at last year's election for the Future Forward Party. The party was dissolved in February last year, a move that escalated discontent and fueled pro-democracy activists to demand the government step down. Dozens of its ministers of parliament, including Thanwarin, joined another party, the Move Forward Party, but a judge ruled Wednesday that as a stockholder of a media company, she had breached electoral law and must leave her parliamentary seat. I'm not surprised. I expected this to happen, Thanwarin told Agence France-Presse, adding that she did not think the decision was related to her gender identity. I will continue my work fighting for better outcomes for the LGBTQI+ community. Thailand's transgender community is high profile, but faces education and workplace discrimination in the Buddhist nation. Country's parliament still has three other remaining transgender ministers of parliament. Move Forward Party leader Pita Limjaroenrat told Agence France-Presse the ruling was disappointing, but hailed her legacy. Even if we lose at Minister of Parliament today, I think we have national, we have a national icon when it comes to freedom and gender equality. Tamarin is the latest casualty of the law many claim the government is using as a political weapon. They are trying to use a legal mechanism against whomever they assume supports the pro-democracy movement, said political scientist Titi Paul Fakdiwan-Banich. So, near daily protests have rocked Thailand's capital for months as activists demand the government step down and call for reforms to the powerful monarchy. Earlier on Wednesday, the cabinet approved plans set up a conciliation committee. It said was a bid to defuse political tension, but the largest opposition party, Phyu Thai, dismissed the gesture, accusing the prime minister and former army chief Prayut Chan O-cha of trying to buy time. The truth is Prayut has no credibility anymore. He needs to resign. Deputy leader Pichai Nariptapan had said. So that's the story there. Okay. So let me just quickly look to see if there's anything more on the international plane that we could share with you. Bear with me a second. This is very interesting. I haven't heard this at all. This is coming from France Van Cat Observer. I have to look this over just to see what it is, because it could be too charged, and I don't know if the information is valid. So we'll have to just figure on that in a moment. Bear with me a second. I want to move over to something else. Bear with me here. Where are we? Okay. All right, one more second. Well, this might be very interesting. The hopes of for an imminent agreement on a new stimulus plan for the United States economy has been dashed after the Senate was suspended until after next week's election. It remains unclear whether any agreement could be passed in the so-called lame duck period after the vote and before January's inauguration. Also today, the Chinese financial tech giant Ant, A-N-T, is set to break records with its stock market launch and further boost the fortune of China's richest man, whose name is Jack Ma. So this is a report that came out actually yesterday. So let's listen to this and bear with me a moment. One second. All right, this should get started. Yeah, it'll get started very shortly. It's almost 6 minutes long, this video.
Time now to turn to the day's business news. Stephen Carroll joins us on set for that. Stephen, I'm going to start in the United States for chances of a fresh economic stimulus package look even slimmer.
So after the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Senate has now finished up until after next week's election. It's not due to sit again until November 9th, which means that nothing can be passed before then. Now, House Leader Nancy Pelosi had said earlier on Monday that she was still optimistic a deal could be done. She's been discussing a plan with Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, which would include another round of cash payouts to Americans, reinstating extended benefits for those workers who'd been laid off, plus more money for schools, among other things. But any deal reached between Democrats and the White House still faces stiff opposition from Republicans who control the Senate and who are now heading out on the campaign trail.
I imagine this isn't exactly going down well on the markets.
No, markets like stimulus plans, as we know, and this is adding, of course, to the worries over the increased cases of COVID-19. We've seen a slump on the markets on Monday. This is the picture at the open of the European markets. Just for fun, it's in French today. The open of the European markets today, as you can see, things still trading down in Paris and in London. Frankfurt there seeing some small gains. Investors seeing a couple of bright spots from some corporate results out today. BP reporting a small underlying profit in the third quarter. That's helping to boost the oil company's shares. They were up around 2% a couple of minutes ago. On the Asian markets, things largely trading in the red. Reassuring you, this is in English. The Asian markets trading largely in the red earlier. Hong Kong down around by about 0.5%. HSBC, the bank, reporting today as well. Good news for its investors. Shares in HSBC in Hong Kong up by 4.5%. That's after it reported a less severe slump in profits than expected, which is what accounts for good news these days.
I was going to say it's all become so relative. Less severe is now doing very well. Despite the pandemic, though, Stephen, the business world does keep turning, and a Chinese company looks set to break records with its stock market launch.
This is the Ant Group. It's a financial technology titan in China. It runs the Alipay system, which is widely used for payments online and in shops. It has more than 730 million monthly active users, more than double that of PayPal. The company was spun off from another Chinese tech giant, Alibaba. It's majority owned by the country's richest man, Jack Ma. It's now on track for the biggest stock market launch ever in a dual listing in Hong Kong and Shanghai next week. Its initial public offering of shares will fetch more than $34 billion. That dwarfs what its former parent company, Alibaba, raised, and to the massive IPO of Saudi Aramco, the oil company, last year. It's also set to boost Jack Ma's net worth close to $80 billion.
Staggering figures, Stephen. Meanwhile, here in France, in the lower parliament, they voted in favour of a €100 billion economic stimulus plan.
This was a plan that was announced last month by the French government. It includes money to extend the government furlough scheme, plus additional help for the aviation, motor and hospitality industries. But with new curfew measures affecting the majority of France, the finance minister has warned the French economy will shrink again in the last 3 months of the year. The bill for the stimulus plan now goes to the Senate.
Yeah.
The tourism industry has been one of those leaning heavily on the government for help. The extended curfew measures, more bad news for the sector, which was hoping for a boost in business during the school holidays. Camille Adelak has the story.
Half-term holidays in the south of France are looking somewhat different this year. Foreign tourists have all but disappeared, and their family from eastern France will have to holiday under curfew. They'd been hoping for a bit of normality.
On avait choisi cet endroit spécifiquement parce qu'il n'y avait pas de couvre-feu. Et puis le couvre-feu est arrivé et dans notre région et
the curfews have been imposed and they decided to come in for vacation.
Pour prendre l'air, effectivement.
And so they came in for the fresh air.
Visit to local museums are in, but eating out for dinner is off the table. And the family are readjusting their holiday budget accordingly.
On fait peut-être plus plaisir du restaurant du
midi. Ourselves at lunch a lot more, and we're doing more activities. Windsurfing.
Visitor numbers in the south of France have fallen from 12 million in previous years to just 6 million in 2020. And hotels are at just 30% occupancy over the French bank holiday on the 1st of November. Since the curfew was announced, they've lost 80 nights of reservations, and the manager is trying to keep costs down.
Nous avons décidé de fermer deux étages.
We decided to shut down two floors, make it easier for their housekeeping staff.
All employees here are on a government furlough scheme.
We're in the middle of the holidays. The hotel should be full. It's really frustrating to be working in slow motion.
It's a record-breaking crisis for the area, with business slashed by almost half, resulting in €2.5 billion worth of losses.
Finally, Stephen, from you, one of the world's biggest delivery companies is preparing for a bumper festive season.
Yeah, we're talking about it already, but hey, it's 2020, well, why not? DHL Express has hired 10,000 extra workers to handle what they're expecting to be record demand in the run-up to Christmas. The company is forecasting a 50% increase in deliveries compared to last year. It's investing €1 billion in boosting its capacity as a result. That's on top of what's already been a booming year for e-commerce because of course, lockdown measures in many parts of the world. DHL says it's seen a growth of more than a third in e-commerce so far this year.
Every time. Stephen Carroll with the Business News, thanks a lot for that.
Okay, wow. Very, very interesting. Let's see what else we have here. Bear with me a moment. Go over to the Middle East and see what's happening. There's always something happening in the Middle East. Okay. One second. This is very, very interesting because this is what's happened in Russia. Evidently, Russians have engaged in an airstrike which has killed dozens of Turkish-backed rebels in Syria. So airstrikes by Damascus regime ally Russia killed 78 Turkey-backed rebels in the northwestern Syria on Monday, a spokesman had said, in the bloodiest surge in violence since the truce almost 8 years, was it 8 months ago. So more than 90 others were wounded when Russian warplanes targeted a training camp in the Faylaq al-Sham faction in the Jabal Duwayb Wiley area in the Idlib province, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights had said. In early March, a truce brokered between Moscow and Ankara stemmed a deadly months-long Russian-backed regime military offensive in the country's last major rebel stronghold in Idlib. And that onslaught from December had displaced almost 1 million people from their homes in one of the worst humanitarian crises in the 9-year civil war. Observatory head Rami Abdel Rahman described Monday's strikes as the deadliest since the ceasefire came into force. The National Liberation Front, an umbrella group of Ankara-based rebels based in Idlib that includes Faylaq al-Sham, told Agence France Press that Monday's Russia strikes hit one of its positions and caused casualties. So that's the story there. All right, well, I think that's all we have for you today. I want to thank you for being with us, that's for sure. And let's see, tomorrow's another day. Let me just quickly look because I don't remember who we've got scheduled for tomorrow. Let me look at the calendar. This is going to be really good. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking to John and Lori Wilde and from 10 to 10:30. And from 10:30 to 11, we're going to speak to two professors with regard to the rationale behind our basis for voting, whether we are voting for identity politics, such as our ethnicity or the color of our skin or our religious background, for our gender, what are the issues that are driving us forward, or has all this been usurped by the political party dogma? Are we now just either on Team A or Team B, however you define that? And so that's going to be a very, very interesting discourse. Hopefully you'll join us. We'll be speaking to two professors and at the same time, one from Kalamazoo in Michigan, the other from Tampa, Florida at the same time. It should be a lot of fun. So hopefully you'll join us then. And thanks for our guests today. Always a pleasure, for sure. There we are. And let's go back to our studio screen and wish you a good day. Goodbye.